Welcome to hour two of the Anti-Media. I am your host, Jake Anderson, and gotta admit, I'm feeling a little under the weather, but I'm not gonna let that get in the way of a good radio broadcast. It's the first show of the new year, and I gotta admit, I'm not too sad to see 2016 die. Is it was a pretty reprehensible year for all kinds of ways, including celebrity deaths, which I actually wrote a thing about for the anti-media, which was basically how the celebrity death issue has kind of almost gotten in the way of real issues. Anywhere from David Bowie to Prince to Carrie Fisher and George Michael, across the board, we've had these celebrity deaths that have really kind of, in many ways, distracted us from some bigger issues. Now, I'll be honest with you, I cried when David Bowie died because I knew all 20 plus of his albums by heart, and it really did feel like a piece of my childhood had disappeared. And a couple years ago, when Philip Seymour Hoffman died, I also shed tears. It's kind of a strange thing to cry for someone you don't cry when someone you don't know dies, but there is a kind of cathartic release in that. And boy, did we get a double whammy of it, triple whammy actually of it, over Christmas weekend when first George Michael died. And then Carrie Fisher died, and gay rights advocate and mental illness advocate, respectively. A lot of people were really upset about that. And then her mother died as well. And but these, particularly Carrie Fisher and George Michael, that happened over Christmas weekend, and something else pretty nefarious happened Christmas weekend, which was that Obama quietly signed into law the Countering Disinformation and Propaganda Act. And this was part of the National Defense Authorization Act. And we're going to be talking a lot about this. We actually have several people that are going to be calling in. We have a panel. It's going to be fun. Two of them are web publishers and may actually, have, there may be, they may see repercussions from this bill that Obama signed in their lives, as they, their livelihoods depend upon people reading their articles. And when the government goes out of its way to, pass something that basically, makes it to where it's impossible for publishers to, get across their work. That's a huge issue, and it's very Orwellian, and it's pretty scary. And so we're going to be talking a lot about this, and I'm going to introduce the Yoda of anti-media, which is DB Schwartz. DB, you there?
Yeah, man, I'm here.
How do you like being called Yoda?
I'm not old enough yet, but I appreciate it.
Yeah. Me and DB have met once in actual life, waking life, and they're making a film about it called The Conversation. And that was a great, great time we had. But back to the con.
We need to film one day where it's like me, you, Nick, maybe Claire, or whoever in a big powwow, and we do like some shrooms and talk or something.
Yeah, now you're talking, man. I'm also joined by a journalist in the field, Chaz Sherardi of it. Chaz, you there, man? Well, I can't hear you great, but hopefully that will pick up.
About now?
Much better, much better. So yeah,
Awesome.
we're just talking about this Countering Disinformation Act now, and for the record, Chaz, you run two publications. Am I right? You write for two different sites. Why don't you introduce your sites to us?
I am admin of United Citizens of Earth, which I helped co-create with a very brilliant individual who's actually has to stay incognito. So, speaking of
Oh.
Orwellian, type of deal. He has to stay so under the radar, he can't even put his name on stuff, so
Well, that's cool, man. And
yeah.
then you also run the Common Ground movement, correct?
Yeah, that's what I started myself as the Common Ground Radio, and it was started already before me, the Common Ground movement, but I, started the radio, and we've been facing all kinds of stuff from this whole bill, and before the bill was passed, when they started attacking quote unquote fake news, we suffered greatly from that. Our posts don't reach a quarter of what they were before all this, nonsense went down.
Right,
So.
well, they that was part of this whole cracking down on quote unquote fake news, which of course we all know is just a euphemism for alternative media and transparency and whatnot. But part of that is conscripting Google and Facebook into these kind of operations, and by doing that they are messing with the algorithm for your page reach. And so you say you've seen that firsthand.
Oh yeah, man. Like before this fake news thing was a big deal, we would get like 3,000 likes a week just of natural reach. Now we're lucky if we have 200 likes a week, and a lot of people are actually unliking our stuff because they don't see us anymore. So the whole algorithm being flip-flopped to, sort of phase us out. Even the people that are, adamant and, liking and being productive on our page are saying they don't even see our stuff in their timelines. So it's the algorithm is completely turning away from alternative media, and that's a big problem.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's kind of I mean, it's a form of censorship. But you're not the only one who's facing this. We have another journalist online here, Claire Burnish, who's been tackling this and writing about it firsthand. Claire, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. 2017 has brought, like you were talking about, censorship in kind of a heavy-handed manner, so that's troubling, but I'm
Yeah.
here.
So have you? But you've seen. We're basically talking about this Countering Disinformation and Propaganda Act, which we talked about last week. But I really feel like it warrants more airtime than just an hour, and especially when we have people who have seen it in action. Of course, it really technically shouldn't have kicked in yet. But we know that they've been using the fake news cover story to kind of dig their heels in and clamp down on alternative media. And you wrote an article about this, and it's a pretty great article for the Free Thought Project. And you think it's probably only going to get worse from here.
It's going to be, yeah, I don't see how this is not going to be an overbearing, onerous problem. You have a dual issue here. You have the excuse me, the US political establishment trying to create this Red Scare propaganda, this hysteria that Russia is responsible for all the ills in the country right now, including the installation and election of Donald Trump to the presidency. So you have that on one hand, but you also have the fact that alternative and independent outlets and some right-leaning organizations that are kind of mid-level media organizations help to basically put on full display the corruption exposed by WikiLeaks of the Democratic Party. And it seems as if the neoliberal left establishment has an extreme backlash for that, but unwilling to accept blame, some people say. I believe that that might be true to an extent, but also it is there has to be somebody to blame for the fact that the country is going downhill instead of whatever establishment has been in place for basically 30 years. This is the downfall of the Clinton-Bush dynasty that's been around for what is it, 27, 26 years now. We know how much power that dynasty has wielded. It's been terrible. We've had the Patriot Act. We've had Iraq that was based on fake news. We've had all sorts of different things that have happened. And this establishment is not ready to go down without a fight. So we have kind of a renewal of all of that with this fake news, Russia did it sort of propaganda. And what concerns me most is that we've entered an era that is beyond post-truth, which was Oxford Dictionary's word of the year, post-truth. I mean, like, consider how Orwellian that is in itself. Post-truth, like, is there such a thing, really? This seems like a very new concept, but like, I posit that it's actually gone a long way beyond that, and that it's actually post-coherence, because we have entered an era where people are willing to argue about even facts that are fundamentally established, whether scientifically or just blatantly, you know, in the public eye. And this has led to just all sorts of debates that make no sense otherwise, unless you look at it from the perspective of the government is involved and has propagandized and even perhaps weaponized language, essentially. We're smearing dissent. We're smearing alternative media now. There was a development today that I did not know about, but found out, like, by searching online, that people are now allowed to report on Facebook posts that they disagree with. So it's not even fake news, which was a cover for a war on dissenting opinion in the first place. It's a war on dissenting opinion, period.
Right.
This is troubling on every conceivable level for any person concerned with free speech and free press and free expression. There is no... I think that people have called me alarmist before, but I feel a bit as if this is like a Cassandra call. You know, we're saying, this is coming. You know, here it is, and we see all the signs, and people are trying to dispute that and say that no, this is, you know, this is ridiculous. It's not that bad, but you know what, it is. So
well, it certainly has the potential for that, and you know, I don't think it would bother me as much as it does if we hadn't seen this coercion that's gone on with Google and Facebook. You know, these days, you know, publishers, you know, the majority of publication these days is done online, and that's where the readers are, and that shift took place over the course of a decade, and it's, you know, it certainly feels as if the establishment has, you know, capitulated to that given into that reality that they can't control the internet. So now what are they going to try and do is control the internet, and it's really terrifying. And you know, Facebook being able to modulate your page reach, as we've seen in Chaz's situation, and Google's ability to, you know, I mean, Google has the ability to change what you see when you look things up online. They have the ability to basically write history, and we know that's an Orwellian concept. And it sounds alarmist, except that it's actually happening. You can't call something alarmist anymore when they're actually doing it.
And it's so subtle, Jake, that it's become self-censorship. I've found myself even doing it now, where what Claire said, where if people can knock you out with a 30-day ban because they disagree, if someone shows any dissent on anything you post, you instantly unfriend them because it's a risk.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's the worst side about it. Like, the state censorship is one thing. Like, that's bad enough. But the true censorship, the true evil of censorship in any society, and the true indication that you have entered a totalitarian state, is when you are censoring yourself for the benefit of the state. And that's what I have found myself doing that on a couple of occasions, like literally just two, and that was bad enough. Like, how can you possibly justify censoring any speech on behalf of an establishment you disagree with? Because you're terrified of losing the platform for your speech. Like, the bullhorn that you thought that you had suddenly has disappeared.
the ultimate ruse they're going to do, or they're going to be able to play, is censor everything around you to protect yourself, protect your family. Don't really know what's going on so that none of this evil in the world can get into you. And ultimately, instead of crushing the evil, we're going to hide from it. And they're just playing it into their own hands.
It sounds like a Black Mirror episode. Oh.
Consider this too, though. This one thing, this has been set up for a while. This is not like it's new how bad and staggering this is, but consider also that for a long time we've been set up for this. There has been anti-Russia propaganda for a very long time, granted, but even beyond that, there has been this whole movement for political correctness that has infected our society. And I honestly don't care what people, you know, have to criticize about that, because it's true. Political correctness was brought on us under these noble pretenses that have literally no basis in reality whatsoever. The idea is that you are supposed to protect different classes of society, different groups, different, you know, whatever. And now we have this development of microaggressions. So absurd that we're talking about changing speech to fit people's particular proclivities. This is inexcusable. I'm sorry, but if you're offended by something, what actually happens when you're offended by something? Nothing actually happens. You are offended, and if you are being adult about it, you move on, and that's it. But we've conditioned this society now where political correctness is not only so acceptable, it is like steel truth, so that if somebody is offended, they have the right to report something, as Facebook is evidencing. They have the right to report something they disagree with. There is no more perilous danger to a free society than censoring disagreeable speech or offensive speech. You have to be able to see something and move on. It's one thing if violence is affected against you. It's an entirely different animal if all you see is something that sounds bad and you can't deal with it.
So your next article is going to be called Rise of the Snowflake?
Yes, perhaps.
Yeah, and yeah, it's, you know, it's a terrifying thing. I mean, I can imagine, you know, Chaz, when you saw your page reach going down, how quickly did that happen? And how recently was that? And how quickly did it happen?
Well, it started, we got shut down. I'm trying to remember what the event was that provoked us getting shut down. I think it was right after the election. They shut our page down under the pretense of fake news. That's the message they gave us, was this is fake news. We have to take it down. Good luck getting it back. So all of the admins, you know, sent Facebook a message and tried to get it back, and it ended up taking 3 weeks. And ever since we got it back, it's never been the same. And I was doing a little bit of research into that bill, and, you know, I hate using the term Orwellian because it seemed it makes people like dismiss what you have to say because they see you as a, you know, conspiracy theorist, which that book was written off reality. I don't care what anyone says. This has been the way things have been set up forever. It's just he had the insight to see how it actually was, and he took it and wrote it into a fictional, you know, novel. So, but the dismissal of our peers, like Claire was saying, is that you have to self-censor yourself, right, to not sound crazy. But the truth is, things are crazy. So it's really hard to, you know, get everything out there without having people look at you strange. And that, you know, that's what she was saying, was you have to censor yourself. But, you know, at the same time, you don't want to at all. Because self-censorship's like what they want from us, you know.
Well, this is an old concept. It's actually a philosopher, social philosopher, Michel Foucault, came up with this idea of the panopticon. And what the panopticon is, it's a circular prison. And within this circular prison, because all the cellmates can see each other, they start to self-censor. And that's kind of what is happening in society right now. Is we this is the era of the panopticon, and social media is really just, taking it to this next level where, the people are censoring themselves and they're censoring the people around them. And we're narrowing down this very frighteningly limited spectrum of political discourse. And Noam Chomsky talks about this. A lot of, social philosophers talk about this, but it is definitely happening. And I think we're seeing the next stage of this right now in the incorporation of our tools and our gadgets and our social media widgets being used to, I think people can look back upon the words fake news as a sea change. A shift in what Claire was saying, post-truth, which I was not aware that that is now a word. I'm stunned. I'm gonna look.
It's not just a word. It's the international word of the year for 2016.
Wow. And
what does it mean? Here, I'm looking it up.
It's an era where we've moved beyond what truth is because everything has become debatable, that's the fallacy. It's like it is as if we are now living in a logical fallacy where the truth has somehow become debatable.
The age of Wikipedia.
Are we debating facts?
Of Wikipedia.
And ironically, this definition is from Wikipedia, so this is just getting weird now. I don't even know if I should read it, but.
I just picked up in 1924 a set of encyclopedias. I kid you not, there's already discrepancies, and I'd love to share them with you.
Oh, my Lord, please.
I'll dig into them, and I'll even post them online. But literally, this is 6 years after World War I ended, and the history book itself is saying the World War I ended because of the Spanish flu, because 20 million Americans died. You ever heard of that in the history books?
I sure haven't.
Exactly. So otherwise, the Kaiser would have won. They even say it in there. Thank God for the Spanish flu.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to read this definition and see what we agree with. Post-truth politics is a political culture in which debate is framed largely by appeals to emotion, disconnected from the details of policy, and by the repeated assertion of talking points to which factual rebuttals are ignored.
It's a logical fallacy. We're living in a logical fallacy. But like I said, I'm serious. I think that it's so much more than that. I think that post-truth does not go far enough. It's post-coherence. Because when you're talking about a coherent society, when you have a coherent society, you have a society that is dynamically questioning the establishment. They're dynamically questioning what's going on in politics and, everything else, foreign policy, and we're not doing that anymore. We've moved so far beyond questioning only the facts. We're questioning each other. People who have traditionally been on the same side, we're talking anarchists on the same side, Democrats on the same side, Republicans on the same side. Think about all the infighting in all of these different groups and all of these political affiliations. Everybody is questioning not only everybody, but everything that they posit. Everything is up for debate. Every factual statement, every, proven accuracy, everything is up for debate. It's so far beyond post-truth. We've moved to a state where nobody is coherent in anything.
Haven't we come full circle on Mockingbird, where they've essentially created a space where mainstream media is now infallibly, I'm going to pump out fallacies now for people that are aware, but many people aren't. And you have society splitting, where half believe WAPO, the other half know WAPO just got $600 million from the CIA. Therefore, they're compromised. Therefore, you can't believe anything they say. But you're going to still have 50% of the population reading that paper and believing it. So you've created now a Mandela effect among our population. This is the biggest psyop I've ever seen.
Yeah, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And it's not only like on WAPO, on that fact, WAPO has published three egregious, absolutely egregious fake news stories while they're championing the idea of fake news. And they have received Jeff Bezos, Amazon CEO, who owns WAPO, received a $600 million CIA contract for something supposedly related to Amazon. But, you know, let's be honest, President Obama signed into law basically a Ministry of Propaganda with the 2017 NDAA. And almost immediately afterwards, WAPO, who has had declining readership for a very long time, suddenly announced that they are having, you know, record profits and that they're hiring literally 60 new journalists. I'm sorry, but there are no such things as coincidences. This is not a coincidence. There is a reason that WAPO is preferring this anti-Russian hysteria, this Red Scare hysteria, and this anti-alternative and independent media hysteria. And you cannot deny it. Like if you look at the timeline of what is going on, this is a war on dissenting opinion, and there are no two ways about it. You can't dispute that. This is our new reality.
It really reminds me of the phrase cognitive dissonance. I just did a piece on that like not too long ago, and the post-truth era that we've entered just reminds me of a whole lot of cognitive dissonance.
Absolutely. People, you know, there's definitely, people are definitely unable to, or they are willing to hold two ideas in their head simultaneously to contradict one another. We know that the government is always trying to manipulate us. This is not new. This has gone back for a while. And the government infiltrating the media is not new either. DB referred to Operation Mockingbird, which was a massive, massive info war launched by the government.
And recently legalized.
That's right. It was that. And so basically codifying into law, the government can legally influence the media in whatever way they want. And that's where we're going to get these fact-based narratives. And that's what, you know, this new Disinformation Act, it uses this phrase, fact-based narratives that will be supported by the Global Engagement Center. I mean, I don't know
that's
how much
terrifying.
More. Yeah, it's unbelievable, and it's so hidden in the way they just buried it, they enfolded it inside the DNA of this National Defense Authorization Act. And you know, if it weren't for alternative media, no one would even know about this thing. I mean,
that's the most important point. Is that if it weren't for alternative media, no one would have any idea. And, you know, it's really disheartening reading the language that this bill is written under. And the NDAA, too, is that it's doublespeak is exactly what it is. Because they, like, make it sound like it's something productive and good and it's going to provide us with real news, where it's really on the contrary in the fullest form.
But that's also the point, though, too, is that they provided this. This worries me so much. Like, people are worried about the Trump administration. We should be worried about this in the context of the Trump administration.
Right. Well, this is
we have an incoming presidential administration who has admitted on Twitter, nonetheless, that, you know, they want to repeal the libel laws that are holding journalists. There are no possible ways to understate how badly this is going to affect the information that will reach the public. We have stories in the mainstream media already that are wholly disprovable, that have been disproven and retracted and still remain online because they went viral and because most of the population believes what happens. Like with the idea that the Russians hacked Vermont's power grid. I mean, completely and utterly false. And yet that story remains up there, just as the story that this organization ostensibly run by 13-year-olds, proper not, listed 200 alternative and independent outlets on as Russian propagandists. I mean, we have reached idiocracy levels. We have reached the point where Red Scare, it's not a new Red Scare. This is actually the more modern and bloated version of the Red Scare. Like, I know that I've drawn a number of parallels to McCarthyism, but this is beyond that. This is worse than that in so many ways. We're already seeing posts to Facebook suppressed. You know, Chaz was talking about, like, his page has been censored and stuff. We're seeing individual people suppressed. This is the suppression of truth and dissenting opinion. And if you stand in opposition of whatever political establishment is in power, because I know that it was done in the name of the neoliberal establishment, Trump is coming into power and he's kind of a whole different animal. But this is the suppression of any speech that disregards the establishment. And if you think about what that means, consider how the internet is censored in more fascistic or totalitarian regimes. Consider how even Russia, which ironically enough, you know, all of us pretty much are accused of being in cohorts with, consider how the internet in Russia is suppressed. Consider how the internet in China is suppressed. Consider how even the internet in the EU is suppressed. Because they've taken our suppression to another level. We now have a propaganda regime in effect thanks to the NDAA. We also have, and this is worth noting and has been kind of underreported, Rule 41, a revision to Rule 41 means that journalists who want to protect sources and therefore use VPNs or other anonymizing tools are considered suspects. And the FBI is now able to access the computers of anybody in the entire world for an investigation. And if you use a VPN, particularly if you're a journalist, you're automatically considered suspect. It's anti-jurisdictional, which means that the FBI can reach outside of wherever it posits it or proposes its warrant. So that if a warrant is proposed in, say, San Francisco, if you're in, Berlin, you can be subject to this warrant. And the FBI can access, without telling you, the information on your computer. And if you're a journalist and you're in Berlin and you're using a VPN, and the FBI wants to see your information, it has all the more reason to do so. This is a terrifying level of a breach of privacy. There are no disputes that the surveillance state has now kind of shown itself for what it is. And it's beyond Big Brother to proportions that we could not have imagined previously.
I can even add on to that, and you know, like you were saying earlier about personal pages being taken down, that's part of the reason United Citizens of Earth is suffering so hard now after getting shut down, is that a lot of the pages and a lot of the people that would share our stuff, they've been shut down too. So this crackdown goes much further than just the media outlets. Personal pages are being attacked, and like you said, if someone wants to report your posts for having dissent or whatever, they can do so. And even furthermore, I just got hacked the other day. My personal email account, which I use for all of my social media, was hacked by an iPhone that was unidentifiable. And I still to this day have no idea what that's all about, but after all this stuff's going down, like you said, I don't think there are any real coincidences here. I think that I'm under the close watch, and you know, I'm sure everyone else speaking tonight is under the close watch too. I had police officers sitting outside my house like 3 weeks ago, and I don't know what they were doing out there, but they were out there for like 2 hours when I had another journalist who talks on Common Ground Radio with me in my house. So I don't know if they're using a stingray or whatever they're trying to do, but this whole Big Brother thing has really come to fruition you know, in recent times with all this fake news crackdown. So we really got a lot to look out for, and I don't really know what the solution is at this point, because Facebook almost seems like a dead medium at this point for us. You know, right. United Citizens Earth.
It's, you know, there was a novel written, a science fiction novel, although it's not, it's pretty more near future than anything, by Cory Doctorow, called Little Brother. And the idea in this novel is that we could fight back against Big Brother using some of these tools. So in the novel, one of the characters basically creates an anonymous social network using a PlayStation. And I think that's where we're headed in terms of extremely intelligent people are going to have to start creating anonymized social networks in order to spread this kind of information. And it's gonna require networks upon networks upon networks of people evading some of these tools. And I don't know what the future portends on a group like WikiLeaks. You know, WikiLeaks, in my opinion, is about as noble as you can get in terms of their journalistic credibility, their goals, their aspirations. But we're about to see an unstoppable force meeting an immovable object here when it comes to WikiLeaks versus Trump. And they just announced earlier today, Julian Assange, the WikiLeaks Twitter account, said that 2017 was going to make 2016 look paltry by comparison. I mean, they are going full hog this year. And let's see what happens now. Let's see. My prediction is that Obama handed off this tool to Trump, and Trump will use it to clamp down alternative media even stronger, because we know damn well that WikiLeaks is going to come right after Trump, and they're going to come after him hard. So what will Trump's tool be to fight back against that? Well, the very thing that Obama just signed into law. And that is a terrifying prospect. You know, how are we going to get, like, who will be Snowden now? Who will be Assange now? Who is going to be these whistleblowers that we had in this last decade if everyone's too terrified to present truth?
I actually do not think they're going to go that route at all, Jake. I think they're going to go after the incumbents that now have no chance of being pardoned by Obama. I truly believe they're going to clean house because these people are true sickos.
I don't buy that. I think that's partially true, but I think it's going to be more blanket than that. We're talking about a demagogue who feeds off of the furor of his followers, right? So we're talking about somebody who's not only unpredictable, he's unswayable. He takes these cues from his followers and just kind of rolls with it. And we have literally this creation of this propaganda machine by the U.S. government, by Obama. Like, you know, the mainstream media has tried to say that Obama is taking away these powers before Trump comes into office, all of these powers that he shouldn't have had in the first place. And they're saying that he's trying to, like, make these efforts to make sure Trump doesn't become some fascist. And yet he installs this propaganda freaking machine right before he leaves.
It's unbelievable.
There is he's not doing anything to stop Trump. He's not. Like, it's ridiculous to propose that.
He made a deal with him.
Yeah, exactly. The imposition of this propaganda machine is the most dangerous thing that we face, because what can happen here, and I think that what people are kind of misunderstanding, when you have propaganda, when you have a government that has the ability to install propaganda, it's not so much that people will be able to identify propaganda for what it is and be like, oh, hey, well, that kind of sucks. You know, we know what that is. Yeah, that will be true to an extent, but worse than that is going to be censorship. This is the new book burning. We're going to have, and we already have, suppression, like Kaz was discussing. We have suppression of pages. We have suppression of speech. We have suppression of dissenting opinion. It's going to get worse. It's not going to get better. There's nothing that we can really do about it. It's a matter of, like, I would like to say that it's a matter of finding a new platform where people can migrate to that is as appealing as Facebook. But part of the problem is that the reach of Facebook with like a billion followers or whatever, or a billion users, that has driven alternative media. It has driven the truth. It has driven people to understand the corruption in the political establishment in the U.S. And that's a problem.
I'm getting a weird feedback. And that's why the establishment recognizes it. You guys check. Getting strange clicking noises. Maybe that's me. Maybe that's in my head. That's in. An ultra low frequency shot at me by the government. Claire, I agree with you. I think that, you know, this tool that Obama has handed off to Trump is, it's the lowest of the low, and unfortunately, it's irreversible now. And this trend that's been set into motion by the fake news narrative is going to forever damage alternative media. I'm hearing a very strange noise. I really hope I'm the only one hearing that.
I'm not getting anything over here.
I have it, too.
You have it? Yeah. You hear it? It kind of sounds like someone shuffling a deck of cards.
It's gone now.
It's gone now. Okay. So, DB, I want to give your theory some airtime here a little bit. You were saying that you think that Trump is going to clear house. And are you referring to Alleghenia in the upper echelons of power here?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it numerous times with the other shows that there's been a clear power shift at the very top due to technology changes, and particularly because the surveillance state became all invasive, it actually gave the upper hand to NSA over CIA. And if you guys understand how the recruiting process goes, you know that NSA are generally speaking techno kind of guys, technology, techno nerds, a lot of those kind of guys. These are regular men and women. These people have families. They're like you and me. They're just super, super smart. And the CIA is generally from secret society blue blood types that go to Ivy Leagues. You can look it up. One works for the private corporation of the U.S. The other works for the United States military. They're completely different. And one decided that the other doesn't need to be in power anymore. And a lot of the people don't need to exist anymore because they're a threat. Because military families' children go missing too, dude. The Presidio military base was real. That shit really happened. So people are sick of it. And they're sick of these sickos getting away with this stuff. And it has to stop at some point. And right now it has to stop. That's all I can think that's going on, man.
And you think Trump represents a power shift for the better, or you think it's just going to meet the new boss, same as the old boss type?
Here's the thing. It's not the old boss, because the old boss and the new boss are completely different. And I think we've gone over it before. I'd much rather be under some sort of a military junta of any sort than underneath what's going on right now at the upper echelons where children are going missing. Okay, I don't care what the alternative is. It's better than that shit.
Interesting. It certainly seemed like there was some kind of coup that went down. I mean, if you look at, 2 weeks before the election, you couldn't find a single person. In fact, the Friday before the election, you wouldn't have found one person who was going to say Trump was going to win this thing. And then you have the FBI Comey guy coming out and saying that, God, what did he say again? He said that the investigation
was reopened.
Right, the investigation is reopened. And that single statement, it seems like that single statement almost just completely changed the election. And
yeah, killed her.
But that was the idea, though. But it was kind of the idea. There are a lot of theories going around still that there was an attempted intelligence coup to assist Hillary Clinton, who was ailing in the election. And it makes sense. Who the hell knows? I mean, the way that these like kind of shady bodies, these shady entities work in the American political system, who knows? It is entirely possible. But the more dangerous thing to realize is that Donald Trump is not anti-establishment. He never was. He never was. Always associated with the Clintons. He always had establishment ties. We're talking about a billionaire. he always had these associations to the same entities, if not directly to Clinton, although he was, but if not directly to Clinton, to the same banking establishments, to the same corporate entities that she did, to the same military entities that she did, for one thing. So this is not an establishment fail. He had a great appeal to people who did not bother or did not even know that they needed to bother to investigate to see like where his ties were. He had a great appeal to this quote unquote flyover America. And that's why he was installed, basically. Hillary Clinton failed because the corruption was exposed. There is no dark Russian hacking aspect to this election. No. There is nothing underhanded here. What happened was simply that the political establishment grew so emboldened with itself that it forgot to look at the populace that it was supposed to be listening to.
Absolutely.
And because of that, it's now trying to lay blame all over the American establishment. It's trying to lay blame against alternative and independent media and right-leaning media and the Russians and the hackers and this, that, and the other thing. None of it holds any weight. None of it does.
Right. You had an insurgent anti-establishment populist come in and say what everyone has been thinking for the past, you know, however many years, which is that Washington is corrupt, and you basically have the equivalent of walking up and smacking a TV that has a bad reception. That's what Trump did. And now we're gonna see what happens when a new establishment takes over, and it's not going to be any different, except that, well, who knows? I mean,
pre-1913, check it out. Check out how it was run before then. And then how Smedley Butler basically essentially crushed what was going to be a corporate takeover. They've been trying to do it forever, right. And it's going to get crushed again.
Right. There was an attempted coup by corporatists. And it didn't go, it wasn't allowed to happen.
It's never going to be allowed.
Yeah.
If you're a general, why would you take orders from a banker?
Right. But where we stand right now, though, I think that, regardless of what's going on behind the scenes, what's most dangerous to every ordinary everybody, what's the most dangerous is the loss of a free press and the loss of a free speech in this country. This is a perilous situation. When you are not able to obtain accurate information because it's labeled as false or it's labeled as disputed, as Facebook would have it, when you have that happening, that is direct suppression of dissenting opinion. And if, you know, whether it's laziness or political correctness or anything else that brought this upon us, when you have this absence of the ability to obtain accurate information, that's the most perilous detriment to the society. We are going to go downhill from here if we cannot have the ability to look online and discover information for ourselves and to investigate for ourselves. And that's what it comes down to. It doesn't matter how lazy the populace is and how much they want to be spoon-fed. It doesn't matter. What it comes down to is if we have the ability to look online and find the information we need. And with the establishment of this Ministry of Truth, essentially, in the NDAA, we're not necessarily going to have that. It hasn't been implemented yet, but you can already see signs of it happening. Well, that's terrifying. Yeah.
The way you summarized it and a lot of the language in it, it really goes down. What scares me a lot is this talk of going to the local level. The Global Engagement Center, it looks like one of their purposes is to support local independent media who are best placed to refute foreign disinformation and manipulation in their own communities. Now, we might as well replace the word foreign because it doesn't matter if it's foreign or not. It looks as though, and with these new hirings from the Washington Post, it looks as though they realize they have to take the disinformation to a local level Now, what exactly is that going to mean? We don't know. Are they going to start creating mirror alternative media sites? I mean, I think it really could come to that.
But I think it's going to be that, but I think it's also going to be the establishment of people who are paid within the mainstream establishment, because you have such a significant portion of the populace who still depends on mainstream media.
Right. And further, this is a little bit chilling. One of their goals is to collect and store examples in print, online, and social media, disinformation, misinformation, and propaganda directed to the United States. So, they're creating a database here. This is going to be an ongoing, project. And, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, are we going to look back and see this as, the start of a kind of global war against information? It certainly seems like it
Yes.
could. Yes, I would agree
Yeah,
with you.
this is what happens when you take the era of McCarthy and the Red Scare and the witch hunt for people who are quote unquote communists. This is when you take the scarlet letter branding of people ad hoc without any additional information. This is when you take that to the modern level with and apply the internet to it.
So, what do we think as far as solutions? Does anyone have any bright ideas on what we can do to combat this?
I think that we're a little bit past that.
Yeah.
When you're talking about, like, I would say that disguising yourself online as a journalist or as an individual would be very necessary using VPNs and such. But as I discussed, the revision of the Rule 41, which anybody can look up, when you discuss the revision of Rule 41, where using a VPN makes you a suspect automatically, where do you go? We're in a perpetual catch-22 in an Orwellian surveillance and police state, and there is not much we can do about it. And we have somebody who has all the appearances of a fascist coming into office.
In
How
my
bad can it really get?
opinion, the beautiful technology of encryption implemented into a social media site that won't sell out would be key. But the only problem is, how do we get everybody from Facebook who only like reads our stuff, when
Exactly.
it pops up on their timeline to move to a different social media just for us
Right,
is the hard problem.
but the thing is, like I said, with Rule 41, if you use encryption techniques, if you're using anonymous, I can't even say it. If you use anonymous
Anonymous.
techniques to use to obfuscate who you are, the government automatically assumes that you're a suspect. And we're talking about anti-jurisdictional warrants where they can come onto your computer without informing you and search your computer's information, including with Tor. If you're using VPN, if you're using anonymizing techniques, and they can extract that information and use it against you. That's the danger where we are.
Right.
We've reached so many whole new levels right now. I don't think the alarm is loud enough.
Well, I think the question is, I think that the tools out there I think we could, like Little Brother and Cory Doctorow, I think we can turn some of these back against them. However, we need a critical mass of people joining us, and that's the question Chaz asked, and I think that's the difficulty, is how are we going to get people to even realize that this needs to be done? People are so obsessed with Facebook. I can't imagine how
Apathetic
we're
too.
going to see an exodus of people. I mean, what will it take? What will it take for people to leave Facebook and go to anonymous social network? I'm not sure that's a realistic request, but perhaps it is realistic to think that we can somehow protect our journalists, protect whistleblowers, protect leakers. But nothing I've seen from the neoliberal establishment or the neoconservative establishment leads me to believe that the government has any intention whatsoever of lending any support to whistleblowers. And it's the scary
It's just
reality.
one party now, Jake, and it's going to come out on the 21st.
Well, we see now that Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, they're both attending the inauguration. This was a job promotion that Hillary Clinton thought she had, and they gave it to someone else.
She
I
picked the
agree with
wrong country to go to war with. She should have picked Trump's plan and allied with Russia. That way, China got it would be a counterbalance. To pick a fight with Russia would have left our flank open to China, and we would have got destroyed, and only an idiot would have went for that plan.
Yeah. So, what do we got here? A couple minutes left. You got to wonder what could still come out here prior to this inauguration, and what could happen immediately after. We know that we're in new territory here in terms of the surveillance state, in terms of draconian legislation against journalists. We need some leadership here. We need to, we need. Oh, Claire, I was going to ask you, what did Assange say in his interview on with Hannity? Anything new?
He said some new things, but really, honestly, it was a reaffirmation of the fact that the Russians did not hack any systems of the democratic establishment,
It was
and
the
that
Fallout 4.
he received WikiLeaks received the documents from an inside source, and he again emphasized that for the integrity of his organization, he cannot reveal the identity of his source. And that makes sense. And that's very laudable. And he said that, just it is not a state actor, whether it's Russia or anybody else. It was not a state actor that gave them the documents.
So not Seth Rich.
Oh, God.
Well, no, but he did kind of,
Hey, thanks for joining us, Chaz, Claire, B, as always. Look the new act, disinformation propaganda act. Let's figure out a game plan here.
Thanks for having me. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.